The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Craig Carton with you for the next 30 minutes, as always, talking about gambling addiction and addicts like myself. Happy to have Joe with us, a fellow gambler in recovery. Joe, good morning. How you doing today?
Good morning, Craig. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I appreciate you sharing your story with us here for a little bit. How long has it been since your last wager?
I think I'm going on close to 6 months now, 5 months and 3 weeks.
Great. Congratulations on that. That's a big deal. You should be very proud of yourself doing it that long.
Thank you, Craig. I appreciate it.
Well, let's get into your story here a little bit. How old were you when, as you can best recollect, were you exposed to the world of gambling?
In high school, you know, 15, 16 years old, I first started placing bets with, like, bookies, local bookies around town. And, just got sucked into it. Loved the action, loved the, you know, just the competitive nature of wanting to be a good gambler. You know what I mean? And you know, I didn't stop until about 6 months ago. I've been gambling for 10 years.
So you're in your mid-20s now, yeah?
Yeah, I'm 27.
Got it. So when you first started, you know, using a bookie to make little wagers on sporting events and things like that, was that something that your friend group was doing and someone said, hey, buddy, you know, I'm doing this. You should get in on it. We're all big sports fans. Like, how did you first get introduced to the concept of getting a bookie and wagering with him?
I can't, you know, recollect exactly, but I think, you know, you have friends that start gambling, or you have friends that, you know, their older brother's a bookie,
right,
or something like that. And then you hear that you can bet baseball, you can bet tennis, you can bet golf, you can bet whatever you want. And, you know, it starts $25 here, $50 there, $75 there, and it just gets out of hand.
And let me ask, because obviously we're much different ages, but for kids your age, my experience has been that even though there's a neighborhood bookie that obviously that you settle up with winning or losing, that those guys also had some type of online facility where he'd give you a user ID and a password and a website. You go online, you make your wagers through a site, but at the end of the day, every week, you pay or collect from the guy. Was that your kind of situation, or was it where you'd call the guy up and get the lines? How did that work?
No, it wasn't the 70s, Craig.
Thanks. I am old. I am old. Like, we used to have parlay cards in elementary school, but you guys did it through websites, yeah?
Yes, we did the websites, and the problem was the offshore websites. Yes, so the problem with me was credit, and I'm sure that's a big problem with a lot of people. I was given way too much credit, credit that I couldn't pay back. And you know, I always say if the apps came out a little bit sooner when I was 17, 18, and I didn't have that much money to gamble, I probably would have been in a less of a hole because you know, on the websites you got to put the money in first. And then credit, used to convince my bookie, oh yeah, I have $5,000 to pay you, I have $10,000 to pay you. You know, they don't care. They'll keep running you up, you know, whatever amount they feel like they can get out of you.
Yeah, especially if you lose and pay early on, you build a track record of trust there. Even though you don't know the guy personally, you like, hey, he lost $1,000 and he paid us back in a week. We can give him $2,500 this time, or $5,000 this time. But it's
meanwhile,
a good point.
Little do they know that I borrowed $1,000 to pay them first. You know,
right.
You know what I'm saying? It's just a vicious cycle of I know.
Yeah, it's a good point though, because there is a big difference, and one of the reasons, you know, we're still gonna have compulsive gamblers for sure. But the level of debt should be, in theory, a lot different than it was with actual street bookies because of what you just said. Like, if I want to make a wager on one of the sites that exists, I need a credit card and I need the money to back that up. If I'm going to bet in the neighborhood, I go to the local guy or, you know, my brother's best friend or whatever the case may be, and it's 100% on credit. So it's a major difference.
Yes.
So you start betting as a teenager. And I guess it's kind of social and controllable, and you're no different than anyone else in the neighborhood. When did it start to get to a place where you were betting beyond your means? Was it from Jump Street, or did you build to that?
I say it was fairly quickly into, you know, I started when I was 15, 16. By the time I was in college, you know, 19, 20, I was in holes. I owed, you know, I was owing everybody around town money. I was borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, as they say in GA.
Right.
I just, you know, it was getting out of hand. It was getting completely out of hand. Even if I won money, you know, I've won tons of money over the years, whether it was through a bookie or on the apps. I was never keeping it. I could have won $1 million. I would have went for $2 million. It's just the way my brain is, you know.
Right.
Wired.
Well, you do two things. Even when you had a win, a lot of times when you have the win, that buys you time with people that you owe money to, so you start paying people back. Or you had a win, so you press the win and you start betting even more money, and you wind up in a much bigger hole than you started in.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times that I've basically hit the refresh button and been at zero, you know, had a winnings that got me to zero. And, you know, oh, Joe, remember this feeling. Remember this feeling of not owing anybody money, not having to, you know, having to be able to go to sleep without, you know, your mind racing. Oh, I got to pay this guy. I got to pay that guy. And even though I knew how good that feeling felt, the next day or the next week, I would go and gamble more.
Yeah, well, I can live to that. And what Joe's explaining, I'll give you just a real life example. So I was invited to go to a casino in the DR, and it was an opportunity to get on a private jet and take my family and another family with me, you know, 5-star hotel, the whole bit. And I had $1 million marker, and I'll never forget that in the first 36 hours, I lost all of it. And I wired 250 grand to them so I could keep playing, because it was like a 4-day, you know, long weekend type of thing in the Dominican Republic. And over the next 36 or 48 hours or so, I won every single penny back. So now I was down $1 million. I won the million back, so I'm square. I'm at zero. And that's a good time to get the hell out of the casino, because it's very hard to do what I did. And obviously, in the last 24 hours that I was there, I gave it all back. So I was down $1 million. I won the million back, so I'm even. And I walked out of the place down $1 million. So yep. I know exactly what you're talking about when it comes to not being happy, just getting to even, because even is boring if you're a compulsive gambler. There's a lot of compulsive gamblers I know that would rather lose a couple bucks than be at zero, because zero is not, my brain doesn't comprehend being at zero, where your brain should tell you, hey, jackass, you're lucky to get to zero. Get the hell out and fight another day. But it's not how we process it. So for you, as you're now building this debt into your young 20s, and you're in your mid-20s now, and you know, you're 6 months in recovery, for most people, there's that one story where everything went south, and now I'm going to go get help because I'm desperate. What was your story from a standpoint of why you decided to stop gambling and get help?
I got to be honest, Craig, there's been about 10 stories. There's been about 10 rock bottoms. There's been hundreds of thousands of dollars wagered in my life. You know, losses way, way more than anybody should ever lose at my age. And there has been multiple rock bottoms. I really don't have one specific story.
Uh-huh.
What I needed to get sober was I had a child about 5 months ago.
Congrats.
So that was a quick, you know, wake up call, a blessing, whatever you want to call it, you know, that, you know, this can't happen anymore. So now I give all my finances to my beautiful fiance. I give him, you know, I don't touch my money anymore. I don't want nothing to do with my money.
Well, I want to stop you on that, because it's important.
A simple working man that, you know, doesn't gamble anymore.
No, I got you. I want to stop you on that, because it's an important part of the conversation.
Yeah.
So you find out that your girlfriend's pregnant, obviously, major life-changing event for all of us, obviously.
Yeah.
And you now start taking stock of the fact, I've got responsibilities. I have a woman I'm going to marry, and I got to make sure she's safe and protected and in a good place financially. And I've got a kid on the way. My question is, did your girlfriend at the time, and your fiance now, was she aware of your gambling at all? She knew.
Oh, yeah. We've been together for years. She's been aware from the get-go,
So when you came to her,
I think it's really important that you do, you know, for the kids my age that are out there, you have to let, you know, people the closest to you know, so you can get help. I mean, the last thing you want to do is be dealing with this demon by yourself.
For sure. But so she knew you gambled, but I'm assuming she had no idea the amounts of money or any of that stuff, right?
In the beginning, yeah, she didn't know how crazy it was. But as we progressed through the years, you know, you can't hide it forever. You know,
right.
we were planning on getting married, so our finances were starting to intertwine. And Joe, where's this money? Where's this? Where's that?
Right.
You know, and you can't hide it anymore. And you know, that's what you know. You know what I'm trying to say.
I think you're actually really lucky in that regard. That yeah, you have this great relationship, this great woman by your side, obviously, who was aware that you gambled, who started to ask the right questions early enough, as much as you may have been in a financial hole beyond your income and your means in the moment. The fact that she had that open conversation with you and you respected her enough to tell her the truth and open up is a major, major plus on your side.
Greg, I can't tell you how much of a plus it is. I mean, she's been amazing and she understands. And, you know, you definitely understand to an extent. I can't keep doing it for the rest of my life.
Right.
She's not going to be by my side. If I keep gambling, she will not be next to me. That's
correct.
For sure.
And
correct. I know that. Now I know that. I won't see my kid. You know, if I keep gambling and I can't, I'm a man now. I have to provide for my family. I'm a father. I cannot gamble anymore. It's that simple.
Well, that's awesome that you got to that place. When you first try to come to terms with not gambling anymore, before we take a break here, was it easy for you to say, okay, I'm done, and you stopped cold turkey?
No.
Or was there a process where you wanted to stop but you couldn't?
I got to be honest, Craig. I think it's no different than a drug. I think you definitely go through withdrawals. I was going crazy, man. I was going crazy. I still, you know, to this day, you know, especially with the ads and the phones and everything just in your face. I'm a huge sports fan. I listen to The Fan every day. I, you know, it's really hard to stay out of that atmosphere.
Sure. Sure. Or as a sports fan, you're going to see a game that, you know, you're still going to like a lot and you're going to want to bet it because you feel like you know who's going to win the game. And you know your buddies are going to be gambling on it and you're going to be watching the game at home. And it's going to be hard not to, you know, to pull the trigger on that. Let's take a quick break on that. Joe's joining us. This is Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Good to have Joe with us here from the Northeast as well. And just talking to Joe about how he stopped gambling, and it's been about 6 months now that he's been in recovery. When you finally decided, okay, it's real now, baby on the way, you know, fiance well aware of my issues, and you committed yourself to not gambling, what was the very first step you took? Was it a GA meeting? Was it talking to other family and friends? Hey, guys, respect the fact that I'm in a bad place. I can't do this anymore. What was your very first step in terms of recovery?
I would say my first step was even before recovery started. I got rid of my iPhone. And I went to a flip phone to stay off the apps and stay off, you know, everything that could let me gamble. I haven't done offshore since high school or college. When the apps first started coming out, I used them exclusively. So getting rid of my flip phone getting rid of my iPhone to use a flip phone was tremendous for me to just literally not be able to place a bet if I wanted to.
Right.
But, you know, as time went on, I would go and find a burner phone or I would do this and I'd find ways around it. But the first step was really just cutting the iPhone or the smartphone out of my life to stay away from the apps.
And I'm wondering, you know, it's only been 6 months, so I apologize for asking this question. Do you miss gambling?
I guess I could say yes. I mean, you know, it's in our heads. It's in our bloods. When you're a compulsive gambler, you love the action. You love risk. It's just part of it. It's like anything else that somebody enjoys. Somebody enjoys a drink or something like that.
Right.
But, you know, you have to just be able to control it. And it's what's sad to me, Craig, I don't know if you want to get into this at all.
Sure.
But the fact that the America or the, you know, the public or whatever it is, the big sports books, they're glamorizing sports betting like it's not a vice is just insane to me. It really is insane to me that I have, like, Jamie Foxx and all these stars telling you to gamble, telling all these kids to make, like, it's cool to risk your money on sporting events is just unbelievable to me that we have reached that point as society.
Yeah, and the thing that gets me is when they use former athletes to do it who don't know a damn thing about gambling, who've never wagered a nickel in their lives, now encouraging people to gamble. Or there was actually a TV show on ESPN the other day, and the host, I think it was Reese Davis, actually,
I saw that.
Was touting some, you know, handicappers nonsensical picks and was like, that's called risk-free business advice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, come on, man. Like, you know gambling's not risk-free, and there's no such thing as a really good handicapper in America anyway. It's all nonsense. It's all bullcrap marketing is what it is. Because I could take a rooster, which the Tropicana used to do years ago, and they would put a rooster out on the boardwalk against all the top alleged handicappers in the country, and the rooster beat them every single year in picking games. So it's absolute nonsense. So
give and me I just that, I want to say real quick, Craig, you know – just the advertising and everything else, it also goes into the new, like, algorithms with the phone. You might have a kid that never even planned on sports betting, you know, sees the, $250 deposit bonus or free bet, downloads the app, and now those ads are going to follow him on his Instagram and all other apps he uses for the rest of his life. That kid might not have been a compulsive gambler, and all of a sudden he downloads the app once just to get his $250 free bet, and now he's hooked for the rest of his life. And I think that's really unfair. I really
I think it's a very good point. And that's why, you know, the fastest growing segment of the population that's now gambling and gambling irresponsibly are young adults between the ages of 18 and 24. I mean,
absolutely.
That's the
These
fastest growing
These kids are not
going
to be able to save for houses. They're trying to cripple an entire generation of young men that, you know, aren't going to have to be, they won't be able to provide for their families when they're ready to settle down. They're not going to be able to buy a house. You know, it's going to be crazy. It's really going to be crazy for these kids.
So let me ask you this. One of the things I struggled with when I stopped gambling right away, and I didn't realize that it was an issue until I stopped gambling, was how much mental space I was using on gambling.
Oh, my God.
Right? Yeah. And one of the hardest things for me was, how do I replace that time? Because now I've got all this free mental time, and, you know, I get distracted easily anyway and have a tough time focusing on things. I had to find things to do, you know, to fill the amount of empty space now that was available in my brain. And I wonder if you kind of felt a similar thing where I'm not gambling. And because I'm not gambling, I'm not worried about gambling. I'm not worried about money, where it's coming from, how to bet, where to bet. What have you done in these last 6 months to kind of fill that void?
Well, I told you before we started, Craig, I really look up to you, and I really, you know, I really see a lot of similarities in the both of us. I'm a very, very antsy guy. And, you know, so in the last 6 months, I've been playing a lot of sports. I've always been into sports. I played sports in high school. After college, I stopped, and I guess I replaced that with betting on sports or whatever.
Right.
But just keeping physically active, I play a lot of tennis and pickleball these days.
Nice.
And, you know, I play as much as I can. You know, I work, you know, a nine to five job, and then I try to just keep busy, whether it's with the baby or with my fiance, with family. You just got to keep your mind off of it for, you know, as long as you
that's
can.
A good,
you know,
I think that's a good tool, it's to stay busy. Like, I decided, like, you know, like, I used to play tons of ball. Obviously, I'm twice your age now, but I started going for walks with my dog. I started working out again, lifting weights, being outside as much as possible, you know, doing home projects or garden stuff or building stuff. Like, no joke. So I have 16 chickens now. All right. And the reason I've got 16 chickens and a badass chicken coop is that I needed something to do. So I built a chicken coop and got chickens. But it's one of the things that's hard to explain to non-addicts out there, how much time we spend emotionally and mentally on gambling. And then when we make the right decision to take that away from ourselves and out of our lives, how we replace that is really a key to recovery. So I think the fact that you're playing ball again and working out and all that stuff, it does two things. One, it fills that void, which is very good. And the other thing, and I didn't understand this until I started to do it, it's actually therapeutic also. Because you feel good about yourself physically. And when you feel good about yourself and you're playing ball and doing that stuff, it also makes you make better decisions in life. At least that's what I found.
Absolutely. I think, you know, our minds are exhausted over the years. And I kind of forgot about my physical body, for sure.
For sure. Well, look, there's a lot of people like you, and I'm so glad you joined us because, you know, you're in your mid-20s. And I like to end these shows by letting guys like you give advice to people who are like you. So here you are, you're about 6 months into recovery, and knock on wood, you know, you get through today without gambling, and we, you know, every day leads to another day. But for the 20-something-year-old kid who's like you, who is in trouble right now, financial trouble, relationship trouble, job trouble, et cetera, who doesn't know if they can take that big leap to not gamble just for today, having just lived it a few months ago? What advice do you give to the young guy or gal that's at step one, who knows they've got a problem but doesn't know what to do or if they can do it?
Well, there's a couple things. Definitely, first of all, admit to yourself you have a problem. Don't drag it along, even in your own mind. Go to people closest to you. Tell them you have a problem. Walk into a GA room. Go to a therapist. Talk to somebody that, you know, you really think can help you. Seriously, just admitting to yourself that you have a problem first, obviously, is the most important. And then recently, I just want to say, I filled out a form with Albany, New York State, that I'm not allowed on the apps anymore. I'm not allowed in the casino in New York. I'm not allowed on the sports betting apps in New York. And if you really see yourself like this could be a real problem for you, or it's already a problem for you, whether you're my age, a little bit younger, and you just want to nip it in the butt and not even have the option to gamble, I really recommend filling out that form and sending it up to Albany and banning yourself from all the apps.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, I've told this story before that, you know, I did that 6 years ago where I can't wager online anywhere. And then one of the casinos in New Jersey invited me to come in, which is obviously a problem. But that is the first step. And to me, when I talk to young guys like yourself, and the first question I ask guys like you is, have you self-excluded? If the answer is no, I know I'm talking to someone who's not ready to stop gambling yet. If the answer is yes, then I know you're taking it seriously. And you should know this. You and I have never met, but I'm proud of you, man. It's hard to do what you've done and to dedicate yourself to doing it every single day. So you should be proud of yourself having done it, and you'll be a great example to your kid as well. So keep doing it. I hope we can stay in touch. And I'm glad that my story in some way has helped you get to a good place in your life as well. It means a lot.
Thank you, Craig. I really appreciate it. Yeah, we weren't prepared for this world of all this gambling and weird stuff. You know, I thought, you know, it's a weird world out there, and you got to deal with the vices accordingly.
No doubt. Be well. Take care. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a good weekend.
Thank you so much, Craig.
Bye-bye. Good job, Joe. Appreciate it. Before we get out of here for Joe Beningo, I did want to let everyone know one major, major thing that took place about 48 hours ago. The largest United States sports books have done something that is unprecedented. They've joined forces to tackle problem gambling. FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, Penn Entertainment, Fanatics Betting and Gaming, Hard Rock Digital, and Bet365 have formed something called the Responsible Online Gaming Association. And for the first time ever, these companies have made a binding agreement to now share information about customers who've excluded because of problem gambling. What that means is this. In the past, I could have gone to one of those operators and excluded myself from wagering online or on my phone. And the other operators never would have known that. And they could have directly marketed to me as a known gambler. So these seven companies have now gotten together, and they are now willingly and openly going to share that information. So if I go on FanDuel and I decide to exclude, FanDuel will share that information with the other six operators. So by excluding on FanDuel, I'm now automatically excluded from gambling on the other six of the largest online operators. This is a very, very big deal and a major step forward in helping responsible gambling become the norm and not the exception. And for someone for the last 3.5 years has been the responsible gambling ambassador for FanDuel, and frankly, the only one in this country, the fact that FanDuel, along with the six other largest operators, have gotten together to share this information is a major, major win for people like me and for the industry. And I'm blessed to be part of that family, and I'm so proud of these other operators for joining FanDuel and understanding how important it is that if someone makes the decision that they want to change their life for the better and get out of harm's way, that everybody respects that decision and honors it. Whichever operator I go to exclude, the others will follow suit and not let me wager there either. And this is a major accomplishment for the industry. And I'm glad that all seven of these operators got together. I also know that they've dedicated tens of millions of dollars to responsible gambling education moving forward as well. And that's a really, really good sign. This is a major, major first step in allowing people like me to know that if I do take the extraordinary step of self-excluding, it'll be honored and respected by all operators. So today's a big day for us in the responsible gaming community. Appreciate you joining us as always. Joe Beningo's coming up next. And thank you once again for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.